Okay, why don't we shoot?
I think he's offset. I've got the slate.
This is, should we just watch it real quick, the only podcast that starts with an intro now. I am Dr. Damon Gibson, one of your co-hosts. I didn't go to 115 years of podcasting school to forget how to intro. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian girl, and she'll rip your bloody arms off. It's Kelly. Big whoop. Want to fight about it? For Stuka. Here she is.
This is our second intro. Because the dog started barking, and I call in, let us know, do you want us to start again, or do you want to hear us yelling at the dogs for barking at nothing? Call in, let us know. I think the world should hear us yelling at Evie, our little foster dog.
Pod Wars, the intro strikes back.
I mean, yeah, have we told everyone about Evie Kringle?
I think she's been mentioned, but I don't think she's been mentioned in the sense of, like, we're essentially stealing her from the from the charity that Kelly works from. They don't know that yet, but she is our second dog.
So she basically
walks straight into the fucking window and start barking again.
She came to us with health issues where she just she weed herself 24/7 and she was wearing diapers, so I was cleaning her every day.
She essentially had no tubes connected to her kidneys.
Her kidneys were not attached to her bladder, which meant that all of her urine just went past the bladder. It didn't get filtered through anything and whatever. So condition likely was because of inbreeding, because she's got poodle in her name. If you buy a dog, just hot tip, if you buy a dog and it's got an oodle in the mix, cavoodle, labradoodle, there is a poodle dog somewhere getting abused. So good for you. I'm glad you love your cute dog.
Listen, don't.
No, yes. Don't. They're called greeders for a reason, Damien. No, trust me.
The breeders are the problem, because I don't think a lot of the time people even know that.
Right? Well, I'm educating them now. If you're going to go buy a dog.
You don't educate people by screaming at them. Just know that. When breeders are breeding these very cute little puppies, it's not good on the dogs. It's not it just causes so many problems. It causes so many problems for people like Kelly who do the work that she does, and
which is why you get a dog like this, Evie, this, because she was inbred.
Yeah, so Evie we've been looking after, but it's also cost
the charity.
Yeah. Well, what should we? We can talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, starting over.
Yeah,
dog
so
rescue.
It's cost. I don't know why I thought we couldn't talk about it. Starting over an amazing charity. If you're listening to this, please go and donate to them.
They're not government funded, and they
not. There's no government funding.
You can claim on tax any donation.
And this is a proper charity. Like, I'm not associated. Like, you know, I help Kelly, but I'm not a member or anything. But I watch the work that all of these people do, mostly women. They all have full time jobs, and then they essentially are full time caregivers to these puppies as well, and their situations, like when Evie came to us, where she needed constant care because she was literally just urinating all the time. And that's what happens when you support breeders, because they don't give a fuck. I'm sure people will come at us and be like, oh, what about my mum who's a breeder? She's great. Okay. But the vast majority of breeders are... This is what ends up happening. You have dogs that, and what happens is they just get cast aside. They just get cast aside, and then people have to do what Kelly does and essentially have a second full-time job by caring for these puppies. And then it's cost starting over thousands and thousands of dollars.
Just the CT scan itself.
To keep Evie alive.
So her CT scan to see what was wrong with her was about $3,500.
Yeah.
And the operation that she's just had that will hopefully fix her. Was about $9,000.
Right.
So it's already like, and medication, blood tests, we're already at $15,000.
So because of the negligence and selfishness of this breeder, it has cost a not-for-profit and essentially a mum and dad run charity $15,000 for one dog. If you extrapolate that out just over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dogs across the year, that's how much money it costs to keep the charity afloat.
Hot tip.
That's not taking into consideration dog food and just vet checkups and all that bowls, kind of stuff.
Leashes, collars. Yeah.
All
can
that
I give
kind
you the hot
stuff.
Tip, Damien?
Yes.
Last year, starting over, I know it sounds like an ad, but I think it's good for
people
to know.
Well, we might as well do an ad for...
No, well, I think people...
If we're going to do an ad for anything,
they need to know what
this.
Goes on, right? So last year, starting over, spent $1.4 million on vet bills. That's just vet bills. That's not... So basically what happens is there's a few pounds around Victoria that they're connected with. So the pounds call starting over and go, we've got these dogs. Can you take them?
Yeah.
We organize for carers, you know, homes. And then once a week, there's a transport day where they all meet on the Calder Freeway. It's like, you know, transport. So there's people who never foster dogs. They're only just transport people because that's all they can do. And they're still life-saving.
Yeah.
Because they'll drive 3 hours to Albury, pick up the dogs on the day of transport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Melton, Sale, Traralgon. Get out of there. No, fuck, it's too late. She's done it. Yeah, and they, mate, and then they pick up, you know, the dogs and blah, blah, blah. And all these people, like my coordinator who I go to for help, she works for the Royal Children's Hospital as an anaesthetist. So she's already saving lives in another realm. But this isn't a thing to like, yeah, I'm not saying people donate or blah, 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 but it's more just a thing of
I am.
When she was, okay, when she was, so the breeder obviously gave her to someone who wanted a cute dog, and then 3 days before Christmas, she was dumped at a pound. And the ranger at the pound, because when dogs have serious medical issues and they get dumped at the pound puts them down immediately, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm.
This ranger, I don't know who you are, well, I don't know what their name is, they saved her because they were like, this dog has not been given a chance in life, and they contacted Starting Over, and then she was given a carer from there.
Yeah.
And then from there, that carer was quite busy, so I took over, and then she stayed here ever since. But it's just because that ranger saved her life. But the family who dumped her 3 days before Christmas, like, I get it. She was, you know, weeing everywhere and you didn't want to take care of her, but fuck you, right? Fuck you because you wanted this cute dog. I don't know how much money you paid for her, but fuck you for dumping her at a pound. And the ranger... The word I got from the ranger was that she wasn't coping, like she was crying really badly at the pound.
Yeah.
So the ranger was like, this poor, and she was only a baby. She only, at the time, she was 4 months old.
Yeah. And then, like, you just got to imagine
the
amount of trauma that the dogs go through as well.
Well, now, Deirdre was a lot better at this. Like, Deirdre, you could take to the vet, and she was a bit more of a fucking, you know, she had so many brain, she had a, I think her brain injuries were worse than we thought because she was just like, la, la, la.
Brain injuries are worse than mine.
Hey. But like say Jimmy, for example, you take Jimmy to the vet, he stresses out, he can't handle it. And now Evie is like that. Last Friday when we had that follow-up checkup, she like just shaking, crying, did not want to be there. So, you know, hopefully things iron out with her and she lives a full life. But every time she has to go to the vet, she don't like it because she associates vets with needles picking and prodding at her and all sorts of stuff. But she also sobbed when we had to groom her. So, but they're playing now. Her and Jimmy, I think, are like good now. Like, I think there's a really nice balance of playtime, like that they do. She is a bit of a bitch though. Like she definitely, like this morning, Jimmy Hat was chewing on something and she was sobbing to me and Damien, like. You could tell from her sobs she was like, I want it. I want to play now, like little sister vibe. Come on, give it to me. I want to play.
She gives off huge little sister energy.
Yeah. But it's kind of cute. Because
no
you're
offense,
like, no.
Ness, if you're listening.
You know, but like, and we, because Jimmy's our resident dog, we make sure Jimmy is, like he gets fed first, he gets walked first. He's number one because he's alpha, you know. Because if she tries to alpha him, it's not going to be calm. But right now, she submits. So, like, right now, they're having a real fun play because she knows. She's like, yeah, he's my boss. He's my big brother. Oh, my God, I love him so much. Anyway, is that enough dog talk for everybody?
But yeah. It's been a while since we've had dog chat, but I think it's really
– I think it's important to educate
for
people.
For me, it's important that you get a shout-out for all the work that you do. and starting over get a shout out as well. I don't think anyone I know would even know that they exist or the name of it. I don't even think people in our life would know the name of the charity. They just know, oh, Callie does foster work for these people are amazing. The amount of work that everybody does, no one gets paid at all. Zero. Whatsoever. There's
zero.
So
every cent goes to dogs.
I see a lot of I was going to be an asshole then and say I see a lot of performative dog owners on social media. I don't doubt that everybody loves their dog. But if you love dogs, go and check out these. They've only got a Facebook page.
That's all it is. It's just a Facebook page.
They don't have any
page.
Social media because it's none of this bullshit. It's not they do the Lord's work. It's really amazing what they do. And to have seen what Evie's had to go through and the amount of work that Kel has
done.
She's
so resilient. You know?
Yeah, but you have done that. You and the other girls in this charity have done that. And as Kelly said, these are people who are like, you know, head of pediatric surgery at the Royal Children's Hospital and stuff like that. Like
a lot of retirees, a lot of mums, a lot of part-time mums getting back into the work.
Yeah, a lot of that. I mean, it's, you know, from not to denigrate housework, but from housewives right up to people who are running entire hospitals, you know, and they're when they're not doing that, they're doing this and making sure that puppies who are essentially on death row get a second chance. I mean, that's why it's called starting over. So
yeah. And sometimes it's not even
about... If there's anything that you can do, whether it's financially or maybe you can like give some time or something like that, then
honestly,
please do it.
Because a lot of people say to me, oh, I'd love to do it, but I don't have time. And I'm like that's fine. But if you've got a bunch of old...
It is a big commitment.
It is, right? It is a big commitment. But look, if you've got a bunch of old towels or toys or leads and stuff...
Yeah, if you can donate stuff to the charity.
Donate stuff, but also transport, like... They normally transport like on Wednesdays or something. Some days it's Saturdays. But there's some people who can't foster, but, you know, they work part-time and they're like, yep, they, you know, 2 hours on a Wednesday, you know, they might go drive somewhere, pick up some dogs, blah, 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 and then drop them off to the houses they're going to be fostered at.
Or if you're looking to get a dog or a second dog or
definitely.
A third. Definitely go to starting over because that's the end game. The end game is to get these puppies and dogs into homes. They're forever homes, you know. So
I get a lot of people who go, oh, I'd love to you know, adopt a dog, but, you know, we've got a cat or we're getting a cat. And I'm like, that's fine. Do you know how many cats, like how many dogs are fine with cats? And you know what it is? It's mostly the big ones.
But at least with those people, Stooks, they're people who are like, you know what? That's not for me.
Yeah.
What there needs to be, because that you'd rather that 100 times out of 100 than someone going, yeah, we could take her. And
no,
then 3 weeks later, I get what you're saying.
No, I'm clearing it up because people use it as an excuse. And I'm like, no. Most foster people have cats already. And we have a thing where we test the dogs with cats. So there's a lot of people who live on farms that have dogs and they're like, you know, livestock. Do not, you know, if you've got livestock, this dog's not for you. This is an only dog home. Or, you know, especially bull Arabs. Yeah. I'm so surprised. What a massive dog breed. Love cats. Absolutely live side by side with cats. Don't know how, but.
Anyway so that's.
Talk about movies, shouldn't we?
That's starting over.
I didn't mean to do that.
I think people expect
there's lots
it.
Going
they,
on. There's dogs.
Come,
we bought a house.
There's dogs. We bought a house.
We're moving next week.
Next week.
If the settlement goes ahead and the real estate don't fuck us. Because I fucking hate them. And you know what? As soon as I fucking all this is settled, I'm going to sing like a canary, motherfuckers.
Let's talk about real estate. Let's talk about
like,
how
we're
they're
fucking
gross.
Buying
Let's
the
talk
house.
About how they're cunty and their assholes.
We're fucking buying the house. We're spending $500,000 on a house. Well, the bank is. Anyway, and these fucks, I'm like, we,
don't
by
forget
law,
the government.
Yeah, by law, we're allowed to have a final inspection of our house. And I was like, I really want to have the final inspection because the whole time this house, the dishwasher's never been connected because the cord wouldn't reach the wall for power source. So I needed to bring an extension cord. And they just couldn't understand it. I was like, our contract says that all appliances need to be in working order. No one can guarantee to me that that's working. I want to check it. I need to measure stuff. I need to go in. They had an old hot water service hanging around. And they just were like, didn't answer. I'm like, Guys, by law, mate, finally, fuck
this
off.
Real estate agent, once we get the keys on Tuesday,
yeah.
I said this to you yesterday, I think you thought, oh, okay, we'll
you
see.
Fucking better.
I am going to find every single avenue there is in this country to complain about a real estate agent,
yeah.
And I will not rest until these motherfuckers are put out of business.
I'm sick of this shit. Like I hated just, him from the beginning.
I mean, maybe we're treading on some dodgy legal ground here. So if we don't say anyone's names, I think it's fine. But people could probably look up who we're talking about. These guys literally tried to talk us out of having a plumber come and inspect our house. And then when the plumber came, our whole stormwater drainage system had collapsed. So we would have bought a house if we had not got that checked.
Mm.
Essentially, what would have ended up happening is the whole foundation of our house would have either moved or collapsed, which meant that we would have spent anywhere between $100,000 to $200,000 to lift the whole house up and get the whole foundation done again. And this arsehole was like, ah, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
No, no, no. But they had the stormwater fixed like 2 years ago. I was like, that was a stormwater at the back. I want to check the front. Because he doesn't know this, but what I do for a living is I work in building and plumbing, and I see issues 24/7 for my day job.
And that's why we've been, because we've made life difficult for them in the sense of we've actually stood up for our own rights, real estate agents don't like that.
Because
they just want to sell the house, get their commission, and move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But I will say this, and I promised myself I don't talk about politics on the podcast anymore. No, no, no. I understand real estate in Australia in particular is something that people are very entitled over. We need to completely regulate the fucking housing market in Australia. It is absolutely the fucking Wild West.
I would love that.
And you know, I just having... I stupidly walked into buying a house going, well, at least the real estate agents will treat us nicely because we're... Yeah, because you've been dealing with rental real estate for 20 years.
Yeah, we're the ones buying.
You know, and you're like, oh, well, and you keep hearing that. It's like, oh, well, you know, when you buy a house, the real estate agents roll out the red carpet. No, these guys have tried to fuck us.
Yeah.
At every single stage.
Because when we found out that.
And we were buying a house that had been on the market for 6 months. Like, you just think that, like, they would fall over themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it just drives me.
Because when I put in the first offer, I went really low, and then he was like, "Can you meet me here?" And I was like, "No," and I met him halfway between what I offered and what he offered.
But he'd overestimated the house by 20 grand as well.
Like, and then he didn't respond to me at all. Like, and then he was like, "I just get a contract." So I was like, "Oh, so they've accepted the offer?" And then we do all the contracts, and he's like, "All right, now I have to go to them and see if they accept the offer." And I went, what are you talking about? They have to accept the offer. So why am I? I'm not signing forms.
The whole thing has been absolutely dodgy.
I said to him ages ago. I said I'm not really that happy with how you did this with the offers and stuff. And he was like, "Nah, that's standard." I went, "No, it's not." And he goes, "Oh, so you've sold a house before? You've bought a house before?" I was like, yeah, I've had property that I've sold before, and basically what happened was we went back and forth with prices until the both parties were happy, and then the contract was done. I didn't sign a contract and then you had to go away and convince the owners to take the offer. What the fuck?
It was just it's bullshit. Every word that's come out of these people's mouths has been a lie.
And he was
a
chauvinistic because he kept on dropping.
He was bullying Kelly and calling her constantly all the time to the point where I had to come in and be like, you're only dealing with me from now on.
It was more just that he would make comments like, oh, I'm just not used to dealing with wives. I guess now these days wives do all this stuff. And I'm like, my husband does a lot, right? He does a lot. I'm just taking care of this situation because I work in this industry and I know a fucking idiot when I see one.
Yeah. And also...
and I know what to do.
And we're a tag team. And listen, we've got... I'm the thinker and the organizer. Not to say that Kelly can't think. I'm just saying I will go... I'm the professor. I go off and I do a whole bunch of calculations and then I come back to the bulldog and I let the bulldog off the chain.
Mate, I'm off the leash.
And she goes for the jugular. Anyway, I don't know how close we are to flying to legal trouble son.
Nah,
there,
we're in but, no, nah, we're in no legal problems at all.
But just if
no
you,
one knows the house, so
To steal one of Seal's jokes, I think we bought the last house. But if you are going to buy, if you are going to buy a house at any point in the future, please, please
reach out to me and I'll tell you what to do. Yeah.
Get a conveyancer, get a lawyer as well if you can afford it. And just do not try anything a real estate agent tells you, even if it's your own father, do not trust them.
Here, I'm going to give you the hot tip. If you're going to buy a house, this is what you want to do. Just get a building inspection report. It will cost you $500. If the real estate agent already has one, say thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah.
Because they're going to side with blah, 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 because they already had one when we bought this house. And then I still engaged a separate guy, cost us $500. He went there one morning and he was the one who picked up hundreds more issues. And because of that, because he was the one who was like, hey, I think you should camera the stormwater. It cost me $400 to get a plumber, just a camera, show that the stormwater was completely collapsed. And then we went back and asked for money to be taken off the price because it was going to cost us a few $1,000s to fix it, which we got. That's why they hate us. So just get a building inspection report. If you're going to spend $500,000 on anything, just fucking pay $500 to get an inspection.
It will feel like, this is how I felt, like, oh, what the fuck, man? I just want to buy the house. You just got to do the due diligence. Mate. Anyway, due diligence? You've got to do the due diligence.
Anyway, we'll be moving next. By the time you talk to us again, we would have moved and we'll can talk about all the arguments we had.
If you are hearing this, we have moved to Werribee.
Not yet.
But yeah, I think I'm going to build a studio in Werribee. Anyway, we'll see.
Should we talk about what
have watched so many fucking movies.
Oh my
god,
I've watched so much stuff.
Apologies for missing an episode as well. I was in Brisbane. We're moving. Kelly's not been feeling 100%. I'm in the middle of being diagnosed with autism. Surprise, yay. Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Surprise.
and it's a much harder process than I thought it would be. I thought I would just walk in and be like, huh? And they'd stamp autistic on my forehead and I'd walk out and that's not what happens. I've had to go through hours of talk therapy and filling out pages and pages and pages of documents about myself. And I love talking about myself, but not in this way. And they spoke to my wife. They spoke to my mum. One day I'm going to talk about my mum's.
No, not today.
replies. I think it's too triggering.
All right.
Just proper boomer.
Another day we'll talk about your mum's reply to...
Everything was perfect. He was fine. The end.
I mean, let's just quickly go back to when I had my hens do and we had a book there where people wrote nice messages to me. It was really lovely. And on one page was my mum and Damien's mum. And I think my mum said, finally, lol.
Yeah.
And then your mum said... Was it, I had a nice time or you look nice or something really.
I had a really nice time. Thank you, Leanne. Not even love, Leanne. Regards.
It wasn't really nice. It was like, I had a nice time, Leanne.
Regards, Leanne.
Yeah.
And also, just to give you the full boomer, the literally three word sentences from both of them took up a whole page.
Yeah.
Just the two of them. Because everyone else was like, oh, it's the two mums. We'll give them a whole page. No. Might as well just put a thumbs up emoji from both of them. Mate, the fucking international boomer symbol of passive aggressiveness. Let's not talk about boomers. Let's talk about movies.
Damien, shut up. What have you been watching?
Last time I watched Casablanca.
Have you seen it before?
Yeah.
Oh.
But not for a long time. And I forgot how kind of dark and gritty it is. Because it's like, it's always talked about as like the greatest romance ever told. It's such a romantic film. And it is a romantic film in the sense of like Richie's gesture at the end of the film where he sacrifices his trip to the States for his girlfriend and her husband. But it actually gives like a much better idea of like how It's just, I mean, duh, like Casablanca's brilliant, but it is actually, like, it holds up. It's getting close to being a 100-year-old film.
Shit, it is, isn't it?
And
Jesus.
It really
holds up.
Holds up. Like,
a few funny moments as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of, like, there's some really good lines. The French police chief is
great. He's great.
Yeah, funny, but also, like, such an interesting character.
You're all arrested. Like, illegal gambling. Illegal gambling. Here's your winning, sir.
Here's your winning, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Humphrey Bogart's amazing. And
can I just say, I grew up watching old films because of Lena. Lena had an obsession. And now looking back, I can see it was just her way of disconnecting from reality, the way that she loved movies. But I also do the same thing, love movies, disconnect from reality. Yeah, and I remember whenever she watched Casablanca, her biggest thing was the part where the French – where they are singing the German anthem and then the French anthem takes over. And then
it's a pretty amazing scene.
It's a pretty amazing scene. And, you know, like the French woman getting really emotional, singing. My mum sobs in that scene, sobs. And now I'm the same. Like, I can't watch that scene without sobbing because it's so fucking beautiful. It's just a beautiful fucking scene.
But also, your family's Italian. And your grandparents and great-grandparents would have gone through that.
Well, my dad's dad was not conscripted because I think he had a hernia at the time because he was still in Italy. But my mum's dad, my nonno, Santi D'Angelo, was conscripted to fight for Italy on the bad side against his will. There was four boys in that family. Nick... anyway, I can't remember the other guy's names. Anyway, all four of them were conscripted to, and then he was sent to, you know, a camp where they teach him how to be, how to fight. And while he was there, he got the mumps, and he got the mumps pretty badly. So he was in the infirmary for like 6 months. And then when he got better, Italy surrendered, 1941. It's 41? 42? I can't remember. Anyway, Italy surrendered. So the story is that all the men at this training camp burnt the place to the ground, burnt all the records, and then they all ran. And at one point he went home and people, like, because they knew all the boys were missing they were looking for him to bring him back. So him and his brothers, and I think there was a few people, lived in the mountains. Until people stopped coming around to the house trying to grab, because at that point they were just still grabbing, Germans were still grabbing Italian men to fight in the front lines, like the frontest of lines. Like, they would die first before any German people would die.
Yeah, cannon fodder. The same thing the English did with the Irish and Australians and Kiwis and Canadians. Anyway. Yes. So I watched that. But we've actually watched some movies that are the same and they're kind of new films. I thought we could talk about them. One is, maybe we talk about 4:30 movie just quickly before we get onto Nosferatu.
Oh, mate. And we watch Nosferatu, but we also watch a Saturday Night.
No, we did Saturday Night. That was the last episode.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm so
And
dumb.
We did not like it.
No.
4:30 movie. There isn't much to talk about. This is the latest Kevin Smith film. It's about 12 months old now, I think. I don't know why, but I talk about Kevin Smith on this podcast all the fucking time. And I don't think I really am recognizing the fact of how big of an influence he's been on me. You know, I'm just realizing, like, oh, yeah, all his, like, he kind of, him and Quentin Tarantino kind of got me into, like, alternative film. And then the first podcast I listened to was Kevin Smith and Jay Muse Get Old. And, like, there's all these things that Kevin Smith kind of got me into. Anyway, I'm always, Kevin Smith is, like, the film version of Weezer for me. Every time he brings out something new, I'm desperate that it's good. And most of the time it's not. And I am disappointed.
This was fun.
But this is actually really nice and touching. It's got a real Saturday afternoon movie vibe to it. I mean, it's Kevin Smith, so, you know, there's vulgar language and a couple of rude jokes
it's
and stuff.
It's vulgar.
What I mean? Some people might not be into that. But, you know, there's some swearing and stuff. But it's actually like a really sweet coming-of-age film, right?
Yeah, I felt that. the biggest takeaway that I got was that I felt really old watching it because I still, I mean, I don't, but I still kind of feel like I am that young kid because I still have the insecurities to back it up. But when you look at these young kids who are like 17 and they're like, I'm going to touch a tit, you know, I'm in love, you know, best summer ever, guys. Like I kind of, like I've always related to those kids. That's always been me. And then watching it as a 43-year-old fuckhead, I'm like, oh, I'm so far away from that now. There's a new kind of person now. There's a new 17-year-old who watches it. Like the same way I felt when I watched Clerks for the first time. You know, like it just made me feel really old.
I want to admit something. Mallrats was the movie. I would like to say, oh, yeah, I watched Clerks when it came out and blah, blah. Mallrats was the Kevin Smith movie that...
Mallrats, I quoted in year 10, I quoted Mallrats every day. More than Clerks.
Chocolate pretzel.
That kid is still on the escalator.
Yeah, but anyway, I would I say this is the best thing Kevin Smith's done? No. Is it as good as the first four or five films, which are fantastic? It's not far away from it.
It's not far away from it at all. It's pretty. I found it to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think the he's found a really good little cast there. Like So quick premise. It's essentially this kid who is essentially Kevin Smith, nerdy kid who's obsessed with movies. Last summer, kissed this the hot girl from school. And then just never followed up on it. Like got really freaked out, and then like the whole school year didn't talk to her. And then one morning he just gets the balls and calls her up and asks her to go to a movie, which she says yes to. And then there's this whole thing about they essentially buy one ticket to like the 10:30 movie and then they try and stay in the cinema the whole day. And what...
Which I definitely did at one stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the... What's really cool about that is that it's a small set for the film. Like it's a really small scale film. And I think Kevin Smith works really well in those confines. You know, like Clerks is like that. Mallrats is like that. It's just in the one mall. Chasing Amy's probably a bit bigger, and then Dogma's huge. But yeah, it's really good. It's just got that like sort of Kevin Smith is. I think Kevin Smith is really good when he's being sincere.
Yeah,
and I know a lot of people don't like that in their art, but I think we could do with more of it. This is a love letter to movies, to taking opportunities and risks, friendship.
Feeling included, like there's that really nice scene where he is trying to sneak back into the movie theater, and there's an older chick who works there having a cigarette, and they start talking about movies, and you know she's just this young hot chick working at the cinema, and he starts nerding out, and he's like blown away that she knows the weird esoteric directors. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to move to LA and be a filmmaker.
Yeah, why do you think I work at a cinema?
Yeah, why do you? Because I'm a nerd, you know? Like, the other guy works here is, you know, deluded, and the other one that works here is cynical. And it was just really nice where he – and it wasn't a romantic moment. Like, oh, now I've got the hots for this chick who loves movies. It was an eye-opener, and then she kind of landed the seed for him where she's
she tells him you're a director.
Yeah.
And she, you know, he's like, what? And she's like, you know, you don't know it yet, but you're a film director. That's why you're here all the time.
How one person just inspires someone. Like, yeah. I feel like with me, with comedy, I used to be obsessed with stand-up comedy growing up, but I never knew I could do it. I never knew it was a job or something that could happen until my mate started doing it, where I was like, oh, can I – this is something I can work on, I can work towards. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you'd see Montreal Dress for Laughs – you know, on Channel 10 at, you know, 9:30 at night. And I feel like that was that moment for this guy when he met the chick smoking behind the cinema. It was just a – I felt like it was more of a beautiful moment that Yeah. Am I making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The first band I was in, I got asked to audition because the girl I was dating at the time was living with the drummer of this band. And the lead singer of that band just happened to be at the house at the same day that I rocked up with a guitar I'd bought. I'd bought an Epiphone Supernova that day and it took it around. Took
with
around
what some, money?
I worked in an ice cream factory to pay for it. And
hang on, stop.
What?
You worked in an ice cream factory.
There
How
used to
am
be
I
a
married
store,
to you and I've never heard this before?
There used to be a store on Brunswick Street called Charmaine's and their kitchen was, it was essentially a very small factory and it was just off Johnson Street and I worked there for a year and a half and that basically paid for my Supernova, which
How
was the guitar that I used
this?
In Fox
You worked
Sound
at an ice
like
cream factory.
Years.
You basically worked at the Wonka factory.
No, no. Take everything you think you know about what it would be like to work in an ice cream place and reverse it and that's what it was like. It was awful.
Why?
Like 5 a.m. starts. I was always hungover. There were no windows in the place. There was no natural light. The boss, David, was an absolute fucking cunt. The worst boss I've had, and I've had some pretty bad bosses. Anyway, yeah, and so I just walked into the house that night, and then because I had the guitar, Brent, the lead singer, has told me this since. He was like, you had a good haircut and you'd bought a guitar that I liked, so I asked you to audition. I didn't even know whether you could play guitar or not.
I hope we passed the audition.
And I, to be fair, I couldn't, but they let me join the band anyway. Yeah, so anyway, 4:30 movie, if you like Kevin Smith, or even you just want to see like a nice, fun, like coming-of-age comedy film,
I don't think
you could do a lot worse.
I don't think it's Kevin Smith adjacent, honestly. I just felt like it was, sometimes you just want an easy watch, and it was, and it wasn't too hard to understand the premise. And I felt like, who's the Asian guy?
Ken Jeong?
Yeah. Plays like the owner.
Yeah,
he's
essentially the bad guy in the story.
But like, I wonder how much of that was on the paper and how much of that was him. Because he's very good.
He's great, yeah.
He plays a character that is so, outlandish and not... Yeah, like, this is not a real person, but somehow he pulls it off where I'm like, oh, he's not overacting or too much. How fun. What a fun guy.
Yeah.
He's fantastic in it. Just a lot of, he's really good, man. He's great. And I feel like it's an easy film for you to watch just to kind of disconnect from the horrors of the world.
Yeah.
It's just real nice.
I'm giving it 3.5 grumps.
Yeah, I'm giving it 3.5 grumps too. The only reason why I'm not giving it 4 grumps is because there's a guy in it that I absolutely hate and I don't know why he keeps on getting work.
Adam Paley.
Adam Paley. I don't know what it is about him, but he just keeps on getting work and acting work like, oh, yeah, he's so good. I'm like, he's not.
No.
He's terrible and he was terrible in this and he looks like the kind of guy that would be on set and would just be a douchebag, like, guess I'm doing this now, whatever, yeah. Like, I know guys like him. They just would be bragging and...
He's also playing, like, a 20-year-old and he's, like, 40.
I don't understand
why you wouldn't just cast a 20-year-old.
Honestly,
like, I just anyway.
Hideously miscast. Hideously. Like, he should have... Yeah, that should have gone to a 20-year-old. Like obviously...
And it's weird, right? Because everybody else in this movie is cast really well.
But maybe like, that's the whole thing is that he is 40 and he's still working there. You know, that's why he was such a cynical
maybe.
Person.
I think it would have been funnier if it was a 20
I just
a
think that maybe he's like
kid.
He just seems like a suck. Like he's probably sucked up the ass of Kevin Smith that much because he lives in LA and he'd be like, oh, come on in then. And finally Kevin Smith's like, oh, fine, I'll give you a fucking small part in the film. Just don't ruin it, you know. Well, I guess that's the... signal to wrap up, huh?
No, well, we've got to talk about Nosferatu.
I reckon we talk about him next week because that deserves more because I need to go to IKEA and that deserves a separate episode.
Right.
I've got lots to say about Nosferatu.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be a long conversation. Well, the dogs are barking and you know
My
what
dogs are barking.
You know what they say when... It's time for Kelly to potty. It's time to end the potty. So
I wish I could potty. I can't potty right now.
You got to fight for your right to potty.
You got to fight before you're right. Oh, look, he's talking. What a great film.
Greatest comedy film ever made.
Look, he's talking too. Who's, I just, you know what I always, my biggest takeaway?
Your poo-poos and your pee-pees.
I want your pee-pee! My biggest takeaway from Look Who's Talking To was Roseanne being the voice of the girl, mm-hmm. where she comes out and she meets her brother. She's like, hey, and Bruce Willis is like, hey, I'm your brother. And she goes, who's this asshole? There's just something about the way Roseanne, rest in peace. I know she's not dead, but just the good Roseanne.
She's dead to us.
Yeah, the good Roseanne.
Wow, listen, Roseanne was always going to go down this path, right? You know what I mean? Like,
But her TV show was so fucking progressive, which is what's so crazy.
It was, but it was written by... People like Joss Whedon, and or who's also been cancelled, but you know, like, wasn't Louis C.K. on that writing staff? Am I imagining that?
Don't know.
I feel like any writer that you know of from back in the day wrote on Roseanne, TV writer, I mean. Also, look up Tim Heidecker's impersonation of Roseanne, one of the funniest things in the world.
I'm already laughing.
Anyway, thank you for listening. We love you very much. We've got heaps of really nice feedback from people who I work with. It's kind of weird when people
don't
work
give
with.
Them shout outs. I'm you not little suck.
What I'm
what
I just I'm not. Well, Hattie listened to it, and if she listened to this one, thank you, Hattie. I appreciate the feedback, even though you said that Kelly was really funny and I was there.
That's right. suck shit, dickhead.
I know who the star of this show is.
I'm the Jerry Lewis. I'm the Jerry Lewis, and you're the Dean Martin. You're the straight guy. Yeah. You are the Abbott to my Costello.
Yeah, idiot.
Anyway, all right, we're going to go.
All right, we're going to go, man. We're going to go buy stuff.
All right, I love you guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you. Bye. Love you.